spend some time first going through the legalities of the ADA as they deal with people with disabilities and the animals that they're allowed to be able to bring with them. If you will, please, if you will, define what a service animal is.
Sure. Under the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, a service animal is defined as an individually trained dog that performs work or a task related to the person's disability.
And I guess that you can actually, if you don't believe what you're hearing today, you can actually go on the ADA and look at what Title II and Title III is where the definitions are, I understand.
That is correct. The Department of Justice ADA homepage, ada.gov.
That's great. Can any animal be deemed as a service animal, according to the law?
When the Justice Department updated its, when you mentioned Title II, Title III regulations, those are the regulations. Title II applied to state and local governments. Title III applies to places of public accommodations or private businesses. Mm-hmm. When the Justice Department updated those regulations back in 2010, it limited the species of service animals to dogs only. So when it comes to different breeds of dogs, yes, any breed of dog, you know, could be a service animal under the ADA.
I guess that's where some of the confusion comes in, I would imagine, because some people just basically establish in their minds or they see more of them than others that that a service animal is typically like a German Shepherd, not hardly a pit bull or some other type of a dog that you might consider that could possibly be one, right?
Sure. Anyway, and a lot of it, I mean, when you go back and think, you know, 25 years ago, when you said service dog or service animal, typically what people would think of is a guide dog that is assisting someone that is blind or has low vision. But over the past years, service animals have been trained to assist people with a wide range and variety of disabilities. So your typical thought of what a service animal is certainly different today than it was 25 years ago.
Well, I guess then I could ask, can any animal be recognized as a service animal, or does it have to be just a dog?
Just a dog. Oh. The Department of Justice regulations limit service animals to dogs only. Okay. Now, there are other federal laws that recognize different types of animals, such as the Federal Fair Housing Act, but when it comes to the ADA, we're talking specifically about dogs.
And then we're going to have a conversation coming up here, talking with Valparaiso University School of Law professor Rebecca Huss, and she's going to talk about more about the housing aspect of the laws as well, too. Peter, I guess maybe it's time to talk about the difference between a service animal and what I know has been called a comfort animal, or maybe the official term, if there is one, is emotional support animal. What is the difference?
Sure. And there are different terms out there, emotional support animal, companion, therapeutic, comfort. And the ADA regulations and Department of Justice guidance specifically state that emotional support companion animals are not service animals as defined under the ADA. So what's the difference between a psychiatric trained service animal and a companion or emotional support animal? The difference is in what I like to refer to as R&R, and that's recognition and response. A trained service animal will recognize that something is happening with the handler, i.e., a service animal working with someone that has post-traumatic stress disorder, will recognize that a loud sound, a noise, the crowd, something has triggered some type of episode with the person with a disability. Mm-hmm. That's the recognition. Then the response is that the service animal, the service dog, is trained to do something, nuzzle the person, get them away from whatever has triggered the episode, remind them to take medications and so forth, versus an emotional support. And I'm not emotional support and companion animals are quite valuable to people with disabilities. They're just not service animals under the ADA. So with an emotional support animal, it's the actual presence of the animal that provides some type of benefit or relief or reduction in symptoms for the person with the disability. So the animal is not actively doing something. It's the presence that provides mm-hmm. that relief.
Where you might have someone, for example, that may have PTSD, and you mentioned earlier about loud noises or something that will trigger them and could set them off and get them into their problems. That's the job, I suppose, in the way of the dog to help comfort them in a way and get them out of the situation or whatever. But with an emotional support animal or a comfort animal, if somebody, say, has been known to have problems. They maybe have panic attacks, you know, things like that. This animal is with them to help make them deal with the real life, I suppose, that they're in a little easier, right?
Yeah, but again, to be a service animal and have the right, you know, a person with a disability has the right to be accompanied by a service animal, mm-hmm. you know, wherever the general public is allowed to go within a business or facility or a government building. Okay. So when you talk about the, you know, someone with that may have, you know, anxiety, if the presence of the animal is what is benefiting the person, then that's not a service animal. If the animal recognizes that the person is having an anxiety attack, a panic attack, and then it does something, it grounds the person, it sits on the person's yeah. feet or presses up against them, there's an example of recognition and response.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Peter Berg, who is with Chicago-based Great Lakes ADA, about the issue of animals that are considered service animals and as distinguished between comfort or companion animals and the like. And you mentioned one of the points we'd like to get into now about the legalities of things here. And of course, the ADA very specifically mentions all of this here, too. I guess the next question I have for you is, can a handler be asked for documentation of that service animal? And if they can, are there certain specific things that have to be mentioned before that that handler can give whoever is asked the questions the answers?
Sure. The Department of Justice regulations and guidance is clear on this, that a business or state or local government entity may not require that someone show certification, proof of training, any type of registry. Mm-hmm. There are two questions that a business may ask, those questions being, one, is that a service animal that is needed because of a disability? If the person responds affirmatively, then the follow-up question a business may ask is, what work or task has the animal been trained to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess in this, obviously, it's important, with depending on whatever circumstance that you may happen to find yourself in, or the person may happen to find themselves in there, too. Can a handler or a dog be denied access to a public facility because the people that are in the public facility are afraid of the dog, or fear of any kind, I suppose, maybe I should say?
Yeah. Fear, allergies are not appropriate defenses for excluding a service animal.
Uh-huh.
There are certain instances where a service animal may be appropriately excluded, or where the person with a disability can be told to remove the animal, that being if the animal is out of control, it's barking, it's aggressive towards other people, and not just barking once because someone stepped on his tail, but you know, if it's out of control, the person doesn't take steps to get it under control, the business can ask that the animal be removed, or if the animal is not housebroken.
Now, since you get to work with cases like this all the time as part of your job there with Great Lakes ADA, are there any instances that you can recall that maybe is a case where somebody brought in an animal, a service animal in particular, we're talking here now, a dog, I guess, and they had the problems of some kind, and the dog, the animal and the handler were asked to leave, and they followed through, and they just went ahead and left.
I've certainly, you know, been at Great Lakes for over 17 years and have had lots of inquiries into service animals, been lots of stories, you know, the stories that make the media, such as the one that you're exploring, instances where a service member, a veteran, has been denied access to a restaurant or a business, you know, when they're traveling with their service animal. It does still happen.
Mm-hmm. I know that the concern is that, you know, like you say, you would think that service dogs have been around for an awful long time, and you would think that people would be familiar with the dogs, but I'm sure there are probably just some settings that an average person may find it surprising for them. All of a sudden, this person comes in with a dog on leash, and we're not talking just the average little leash. We're talking a regular established leash that should automatically, and if they're not wearing some kind of vest or some other identification, that signifies that I am a service dog. I'm here for working purposes. Don't touch me.
Yeah. And thanks for bringing. That's a good point. That the standards don't require, the ADA doesn't require that a service animal wear any type of identification. Mm-hmm. People can purchase that online. But to your point and to your question, I think what is important there is that people with non-obvious non-visible disabilities use service animals, and I think that's where a lot of the part of the issue is that you have someone that's diabetic that uses a service animal that can detect low glucose levels, or someone that has a seizure condition, a service animal that's trained to detect an oncoming seizure, or we talked about the trained psychiatric service animals. Mm-hmm. So people, it's like someone pulling into the accessible parking space at the shopping center, and the person gets out, they're not using a wheelchair or cane or crutches, and someone thinks, well, that's not a person with a disability. Well, they very well could have, a cardiac condition or respiratory condition. Right. So when people see someone walk into a business and they don't have an obvious disability, a lot of people automatically go, well, that's someone that's their pet, or they're trying to, get one over on the business.
Well, we hear about people bringing dogs and purses and handbags and things like that. That may or may not be the case. That may be a comfort animal, but just the same, I guess that's what probably prompts people to kind of think twice about whether it's a service animal or not, I would think so.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we hear from businesses, that think that people are trying to pull one over and bring their pet in with them. And yes, there is abuse of that. If people know the two questions and they answer them appropriately, then, they're going to be allowed to bring their pet in as a quote-unquote service animal. But, the ADA, the service animal requirements, it's not unlike other laws. There are speed limits out there on roadways that people, don't follow, and people don't always pay their taxes. So this is just another example of where people, if they can get away with something, they will attempt to do so.
Now, Peter, if you will, tell us if your particular organization, Great Lakes ADA, or other similar organizations that are around here in the Midwest, do any kind of training sessions for business owners, for employees or staff members, and like to inform them as to what the rules are, how they're supposed to follow through if somebody comes in with a service animal.
Absolutely, and you would think that that we pre-planned this, but we just announced an upcoming training session that's going to be through our audio conference program that's taking place on November 21st between 1 and 2:30 p.m. Central Time. That session will be on service animals. People can get information about the session and actually register for the session by visiting ADA-audio.org. It's free to participate in that training. And then the Great Lakes ADA Center also does customized trainings. I've done trainings in the past as part of settlement agreements, for businesses that, ran afoul of the law. So Right. We provide information and we provide training on the ADA and service animal requirements.
Now, we're specifically, of course, dealing with the County Line Orchard incident here talking today, but I'm sure that you probably have come across other cases like this and probably come across the desk and we have discussions about this amongst your staff members where you have this question about service animals and comfort animals, and the confusion is there, and how do you deal with that? So I imagine this is not new, certainly.
No. And the key with many aspects of the ADA is education and training. Our business is training their frontline staff, because it's not enough for the manager or the owner of a business to understand ADA requirements. It's the frontline staff that's going to have that first interaction with the public. They need to know what the requirements are. I can say in general, businesses have done a fairly good job of training employees once the definition of service animals changed back in 2010. Through my experience in talking with people on the telephone, I have noticed that some people will identify their animal as an emotional support or a companion animal, but then as I talk further with them, they begin to describe work and tasks that the animal actually performs for them. So it is a service animal, but they identify it incorrectly as a companion or support animal.
Well, Peter, thank you very much for spending time with us today to talk about this topic here, and I'm sure it'll come up again in some other conversations, and if so, we'll hopefully get back with you to talk more about it here. We've been talking with Peter Berg. He is with Chicago-based Great Lakes ADA, which, of course, stands for the Americans with Disabilities Act, about the rules and the regulations about having service animals and how we can try to differentiate them between the device, I guess, that's out there called a comfort animal or an animal that might be able to help for emotional support for somebody. Peter, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Let's continue our conversation talking about the differences between service animals and comfort animals here. Now, let's take it from another voice in the conversation. Rebecca Huss is a professor of law. She is the Phyllis and Richard Duesenberg Chair in Law at the School of Law at Valparaiso University, and she joins us from her office over on campus. Professor Huss, thank you very much for being with us today.
I appreciate the opportunity to talk about these important issues.
We've been in our conversation here with Mr. Berg about the ADA issues. We brought up here in our conversation before we've started talking here, before we went on the air, to talk about the fact that there are more laws involved that deal with service animals and what people can have as service animals, as well as, I guess, this question of comfort animals, which is a much newer concept, I understand, than the typical guide dogs and things like that that people expect to see. People that are blind and have other physical disabilities have a dog to lead them through life, basically, especially when they're out in public. Where do all of these things fit in here with the research that you've done? Because animal law is one of the classes that you teach there at Valparaiso.
Right. Well, one of the things I focus on is the actual confusion that people have over what is covered. And under the ADA, it's a pretty narrow definition of service animal. An animal has to be a dog, and there's some special rules relating to miniature horses, but we don't see very many cases about that. But generally, the service animal has to be a dog that's individually trained to do work or perform tasks. So you mentioned the idea of a comfort animal. When the regulations were revised and became effective in 2011, it became very clear in those regulations that an animal that merely provides emotional support would not be covered under the ADA.
And we've talked about, we mentioned about the specifics here, and we cover some of these things, of course, also in our other conversations about what the law says. We look at the typical dogs and typical cats and the like here. What does the law specifically say about service animals now?
Well, service animals can do a variety of tasks, and I think this is where there can be some confusion. Essentially, service animals can do tasks relating to seizure alert or even tasks relating to psychological or psychiatric disorders that might not be apparent to someone who might be interacting with the person with a disability. So, for example, a service animal might be trained to do the task of nudging a person to bring them back to the time and place where they're at. Mm-hmm. And so those are somewhat subtle actions that we're not necessarily used to seeing in a public sphere.
When you look into this in more detail, you talk about the legal aspects here. We probably also, I guess, should mention as well, too, that there are a lot of other issues that come up besides just access to property, access to public facilities and the like, and what the ADA covers in that respect from the Americans with Disabilities Act. You mentioned, too, about the fact that there's some housing laws that play into this, too, and I think maybe people don't realize that. You think about the Fair Housing Act, you think about that specifically about having access to the type of housing that people should have or can have, but that also includes these types of animals, too. How does all that fit into this?
Well, that's an excellent question, because the definition under the Fair Housing Act is assistance animals. Mm-hmm. And assistance animals actually is a broader definition than what we see for the Americans with Disabilities Act for service animals. Specifically, assistance animals, which are protected, so a person who needs to have an assistance animal with them in housing, and the definition of housing is actually very broad too, can be a service animal that we think of as a traditional service animal, an individually trained animal that is trained to do work or perform tasks, but also the assistance animal definition includes emotional support animals. And because of that, you can have an animal that's not individually trained, and the guidance that the government has provided to us illustrates that you absolutely don't need to have an animal that's individually trained that still would fit within that definition of assistance animal. Mm-hmm. The other really important difference between the definition of assistance animal under the FHA, or the Fair Housing Act, and what we see under the ADA is there's not a species restriction. So that's how you can have a cat that can be acting as an emotional support animal. One final thing that's important to remember about the Fair Housing Act, though, you have to still show, and the requirements for providing the information to the housing provider are broader than what is required for public accommodations, a restaurant, or out in an ADA situation,
right,
you have to show a connection or a nexus between the disability and the need for the assistance animal. So you still have to show that you are an individual who is covered by the act, you have a disability, and the animal is necessary for you to enjoy the housing.
So I guess if you come to a point, for example, if you go to a landlord or you go to a manager at an apartment complex and you'd like to find a place to live and you have a comfort animal, we'll say a cat, maybe because perhaps you suffer from some kind of trauma or maybe you have anxiety attacks or something like that, and this animal helps you cope with life, you have to at least show some doctor's information,
yeah,
whatever.
You have to have some documentation.
Yeah.
And there's restrictions on how deep of a dig the housing provider can ask for documentation, but you do need to have credible documentation that you have a need for this animal. Now, there's been certainly case law that indicate that if somebody clearly has a disability and there's a easily shown need for an assistance animal, then a housing provider should not be asking for documentation. But certainly for people who don't have an apparent disability, it's very common for housing providers to ask for documentation that can be things like a doctor's letter to indicate that the animal is necessary to assist the person with a disability.
What's brought us to our attention and has gotten our curiosity going on this topic has been the incidents that happened recently at the County Line Orchard involving a woman and apparently her comfort animal, or what's been determined to be a comfort animal, not a service animal, and people that work at the facility. And we're not getting into the individual case in this because we don't have anything that we can really talk about right now about this, but it's such an interesting topic. When you have a situation like that, and maybe you know of some other cases in case law that bring this up in other situations, not here in Indiana necessarily, but we find that it's very difficult for people that can show that they have the need for comfort animals, is what you say, and you have to have the documentation when it comes to housing and the like. Do you have to have that sort of documentation if you happen to bring the animal out in public and you try and bring the animal in with you into some place?
Well, there's a couple things that relate to the recent incident. First of all, not even people who have disabilities always use the, quote, magic words that we see in the Americans with Disabilities Act. So as long as an animal is individually trained to do work, perform tasks, That's the key to whether the animal should be accommodated in a public accommodation, for example, in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unclear whether the dog was really a quote, comfort animal or a dog individually trained to do work or perform tasks, and that's something that we'll have to see going forward.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue about that particular incident is that from some of the coverage that I saw, one of the reasons why there was some concern about the animal was because of the breed of the animal. And in the recent regulation revision, the Department of Justice made it very clear that it's not acceptable to exclude a service animal based merely on breed. Specifically, the Department of Justice has said, and there's case law that backs this up now, that an accommodation, a public accommodation, a restaurant, et cetera, can't exclude a service animal based on breed, period.
Yeah.
If an animal is out of control, that animal can be excluded, but you can't do it based solely on the appearance of the dog. So that's something that can cause confusion because it is different than what we've seen historically. But we do have guidance on that from the Department of Justice. So I think my point is that even people who might be partnered with service animals and might have the ability to access might not be using the language that the businesses are used to hearing. And businesses are not necessarily used to seeing animals that aren't traditionally used as service animals.
Right. Now, do you think this, not necessarily this particular incident, but others that may have happened elsewhere or might happen in the future, might prompt more discussion, maybe some changes in the law when it comes to dealing with the distinction between service animals and comfort animals to try and clear all this confusion up?
So that's a great question. I don't anticipate we're going to have a wholesale scale change in the regulations because we did just have this process not very many years ago. One area that we are seeing some potential rulemaking in is on airplanes. There's a different law called the Air Carrier Access Act, referred to as the Air Carrier Access Act, that the Department of Transportation runs that has an even more complicated system for determining what animals can be brought on the plane by persons with disabilities. So there actually was a rulemaking process that started last year that it was a negotiated rulemaking process, which is basically a process where you try to get a lot of constituencies together to make a decision about what a proposed rule should be. Mm-hmm. It failed from the perspective of the service animal definition because the constituencies could not agree. And so I anticipate we probably will see some rulemaking there. That, again, is a more complicated process. So for persons that don't understand why somebody can have a cat on a plane, that definition is different, and the process for determining whether you're allowed to have your cat on the plane as an accommodation for someone who's disabled is a different set of rules.